Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 141 of Getting It Out Podcast. That was Silence Equals Death out of New Jersey. The song is called Switched, and it's from their new album, Revolution Rising, which is coming out on Upstate Records and Blood Blast Distribution. As you know, if you regularly listen to Getting It Out Podcast, that we're big fans of Upstate Records and the products that they put out. And here's another good one. Nice solid dose of hardcore from New Jersey, which, you know, it's New Jersey. I usually try to make some kind of joke about New Jersey. I don't have one in the queue right now, Silence Equals Death doesn't deserve one. They're well done. They just released a video for this song, actually. Again, the song's called Switch. It's got a little bit of the what's that movie with Michael Douglas where he kind of gets pushed over the edge. It's got that kind of vibe going on, and I think you'll enjoy it if you're like in your 30s or 40s and you still find yourself listening to aggressive music and just trying to be a regular person, and then everybody keeps pushing you over the edge. But you never really snap, but you dream about it. Maybe that's kind of where you're at. Maybe not. Maybe it's just me. Yeah, anyway, check that out. This record, I think it doesn't come out for a little while. Let's see, November 13th. So that's close, but not too close. You got over a month to prepare yourself for Revolution Rising by Silence Equals Death on Upstate Records, November 13th. Okay, on this episode, I got an interview with the legendary Burton C. Bell. You might know him from Fear Factory, but we're talking about Ascension of the Watchers, and we'll get all into that. So let's go quickly to the best intro in the podcast world by by none other than the infamous, the well-known, the best crossover thrash band to ever exist out of New Jersey, Hot Zone.
Yeah, what's good, all you bitches and bitches? It's the illustrious Hot Zone, back at it again with another podcast intro. They said, oh, you want to do a podcast intro for the Getting It Out podcast? I said, oh, shit, I got to write a rap verse, don't I? They said, no, you don't got to write a rap verse. It's a hardcore podcast. I said, all right, I think I can maybe make that happen. Let's see what we can do. Kick it. Make family out of friends, make friends out of enemies. Peace to my family, make friends till they bury all the places we've been. We're never sitting it out, we be getting it in. Where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been. We're never sitting it out, we'll be getting it in. Where you getting it out? Get in and out! Alright, motherfuckers, you're in the right place at the right time. Rest in peace, Jay Money, and LFTW forever!
Hello, everyone. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're doing all right. I would settle for okay. If you're doing bad, if you're doing sad, please get some help. Not for my sake, for your own. Anyway, I don't want to start this one off weird. Maybe it's a little too late, but that's okay because I like weird, and so do you, or else you wouldn't be listening to Getting It Out podcast, right? That's the way it works, huh? We all find these stupid little things that we get into, and then we obsess over them. All right, maybe that's just me, and maybe that's not true. But you know what? I can lie here. It's all right. Nobody's here. Nobody's gonna bust me. There's no podcast cops yet. There might be. Are you out there? Are you undercover? That'd be weird. You know, it's funny. We watched that Social Dilemma documentary over the past week. It takes my wife and I several days to watch something that's more than an hour long. It's funny. We can watch like 3 hour long episodes of a show in a row, and that's not a problem. But if we want to watch one thing that's over an hour long, we're going to need to break that up into several segments, 15 minutes one night. You know, we usually would start off strong, maybe a half hour to 45 minutes, plug in another 15-minuter like 2 weeks later, and then wrap it up with a whole hour like a month or so after that. That's how we do it. So we just watched this Social Dilemma, and people were talking about how it's eye-opening and, I don't know, scary, I think someone used the word for. I thought it was all kind of stuff we already knew, just explained very thoroughly. And yeah, I don't know. the experts did a fine job of it, but I guess what concerns me is the way people are like freaking out about how they watched it. And then ironically, they're going on to social media to tell other people to watch it, which is again, ironic, but kind of funny. And, maybe some people are having a good laugh and doing that. I don't know. But that's because I don't know much of anything. But I do know that I don't have a real point for bringing that up, and that I'm excited to share with you this interview I did with Burton C. Bell of Fear Factory. I don't know if you have to say the C in his name, but all the time that I've been aware of who he is, it's been Burton C. Bell, so it's going to stay Burton C. Bell. I should have asked him what that C is for. Maybe it's Crayley. Maybe his middle name is my last name, and somehow we're related. It's a Susquehanna River thing, I guess. You had to be there. Probably not, though. But hey, so yeah, you probably know him as I did too as the singer of Fear Factory, which millions upon millions upon millions and millions and millions of people do, because that is true. He is the singer for Fear Factory until this week, actually. Just earlier this week, I believe it was, he quit the band. I don't know if it's the first time he quit the band. Don't really care either. Fear Factory was and remains to be a very important band for me. Obsolete was one of my favorite records when I was a teenager. Still love it. Demanufacture is great. Of course, the first one I had was Soul of a New Machine. I'm not saying that to be like the guy who was in on the ground floor, because that's not true. I just remember there was a local band called Scarred for Life, and they used to cover Scum Grief, and that was the way I came to know about Fear Factory. So that's where I was a Soul of a New Machine guy. Some of the other stuff, the biggest song I think was Lynchpin off of Digimortal, which I know people poo-poo that record, but hey, I don't mind that one either. I'll sing you every lyric to Lynchpin, right? And it's not just me. I know there's plenty of us out there. But anyway, Fear Factory, they did their later stuff was good too. It was kind of a return to form. But whatever. That's not happening anymore. And I'm glad that me and Burton did not say one thing about Fear Factory, except maybe the end. Towards the end, we talked a little bit about it, but for the most part, we kept this all on his new project. It's not even new. It's been around for about 10 years now, but it's called Ascension of the Watchers. And maybe as you'll hear me say, you're like me, I didn't know about it. I do now. There's a new record called Apocrypha that comes out pretty soon. That'll be out next week, actually, October 9th on Dissonance Productions out of the UK. So I wasn't really prepared for a long interview with Burton, but thankfully we stretched this out and he told some stories because it was a cool opportunity to talk to, I don't want to call him an idol, but you know, somebody that I've been listening to my whole life, somebody that I've been a fan of for this long. And it's also always a huge relief when you talk to somebody that you're a fan of and they're not a total dick. So thank you, Burton, for not being a total dick and being a friendly guy and taking the time to talk with me on like a Tuesday or whenever the fuck we were talking. Actually, you know what I was worried about at one point? I was worried as the conversation was getting a little longer, I was worried that my daughter was going to be getting dropped off mid-conversation and it was going to screw everything up. So I don't remember if I rushed off at the end, but I could have kept this one going for a while because it was pretty enjoyable and again, a cool opportunity for a fan to talk to somebody that they admire and have listened to for most of their life. Genuinely, most of my life, I've been a Fear Factory fan, and now Ascension of the Watchers fan. I want to play different songs off of Apocrypha that I like, but from what I see that's out there that are released as singles, I think I can only play two of them. So I'm only going to play the two that are out there as singles. But the deeper tracks, they're not even deep cuts. They're like 3 and 4 or 5 and 6. Off this record are my favorites. You're not going to hear them today, though. So all the more reason for you to look for this record on October 9th. Buy it wherever you can. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. It's not particularly heavy. But you know, hey, wait. I'm talking too much. And I suppose that's nothing new. But let's just get into it. And let me play you a song off of Apocrypha. It's the lead-off track. It's called Ghost Heart. And then let's just get into my conversation with Burton.
Yeah.
I personally have a big fan of yours in particular for a long time, so it's very cool to get the opportunity to speak to you. Where are you at these days?
Oh, I am currently in North Hollywood, California.
Okay. See, I saw the area code and I thought that looks nearby, but I guess not.
Well, I used to live in Pennsylvania. I still have the Pennsylvania phone number because I've had it for so long. So you know how it is. Harder to change it than to keep it.
You do. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. And I saw that area code and thought that's nearby, but no, but I get it.
Yeah. My children still live in Pennsylvania with their mother, so I'm still go out there frequently.
Nice. Well, I'm in Lancaster myself, so
yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah. But obviously we're talking about Ascension of the Watchers today, and I got to tell you, even though I'm a fan of yours for a very long time, I didn't even know this thing existed, and now I feel like an idiot because now I'm listening back to the old shit and like, well, I've been missing out here because this is really cool, and this new record, Apocrypha, is I've been listening to it now for like 2 weeks straight. And
well, thank you. Yeah, I won't fault you for not hearing it before because I've been talking about it a lot and over the years, but the first release was independent. Iconoclast was independent, only available from my website. And then Numinosum, it was released in 2008, but that wasn't pushed by the label whatsoever. So I'm not surprised you didn't hear about it. But I'm glad you're checking out the old stuff because I'm still very proud of that music, and I'm definitely very proud of the new album Apocrypha. We've taken leaps and bounds over the years.
Yeah, and well, I mean, I was going to get to that, is the fact that how much, like, I liked the other stuff when I listened to it, but I listened to this first, and this new album is definitely head and shoulders above the other stuff. But when I was looking earlier today at your website where I saw you have Iconoclast for sale, and me just for looking at it, I was like, well, that's really cool that LP you have there. And honestly, it's like, oh, it's got pictures of the Susquehanna River, and that's if you ask, I have no connection to any body of water in the country or anywhere. But if I had to pick one, it'd be the Susquehanna because it's been it goes through my county.
I love the Susquehanna River. I was living in Milton for a long time.
Okay.
North of Lancaster.
Yeah.
So around the Lewisburg area, and living in that area was highly inspirational for the creation of Ascension of the Watchers. You know, it's a very, how it is. It's very serene, pastoral, the rolling hills, the greenery, the Susquehanna River. It's in the Susquehanna Valley. So, the fog that comes in during the autumn and spring, just thick as pea soup, it makes it for a very it's like a, not a fantasy, but it's very storybook-like. And it's, I just found it very inspirational, and it was very incremental in creating this band.
Well, that's interesting you say all that about the landscape, because I think much like your music here on these records, you can kind of take it one way or the other. You can be either inspired by it, or you can be kind of depressed by it. I remember one time I sat on a bench on the side of Route 15 in Newport, Pennsylvania, for about 5 hours waiting for a car ride, and there was nothing worse. Even though the Susquehanna was right in front of me, and
time just goes by and you never even notice.
Yeah, no,
and there one when we would create when I create this music, like especially when we demoed it, I would leave John's house. He lives in Mifflinburg, and I would leave his house and drive to Milton. I'd drive, it's like 20, half an hour drive through the countryside between both places, just small roads, crossing the river, very small farm roads. And late at night, have a CD of the demo we've just done or mixed, and just listening to it, driving across the countryside during the sunset or during the fog, was just seemed so fitting and perfect. that, you know, the music fit the landscape. And for me, it was my soundtrack of my life and everything that was going on in my life during these times. And it was, you know, the environment has a lot to do with my inspiration.
And were the songs that are on Apocrypha written in that same kind of scenario? Or
yeah, absolutely. I wrote the songs over time. Each song was, you know, like I said, inspired by a poignant event in my life. And so I would sit down at my guitar or sit down at the piano, and I would just, you know, start strumming or playing chords that, you know, resonated with what I was feeling. And, you know, it might be depressing for some people, but there's, you know, for me in my music, there's always a sense of hope. So, I guess it's melancholy,
right?
Is the right word. And, oh God, where was it going? So yeah, I would sit down and create this. So I did write, all these parts were written in that, you know, while I was still in Pennsylvania, from Storm Crow. Storm Crow was the first one, and then Wanderers was the last one. So it's, and each one was a different moment of emotion and mood.
Yeah.
So, I wrote it all in that area.
Nice. That makes it even cooler to me. The
fact that we recorded Northstone, which is in South Wales, you know, that studio provides practically almost the same environment that John's studio did. It's in the countryside, away from people. It is connected to a manor, 250-year-old manor, but the whole landscape is just beautiful and serene. And, it's like being, when you go there, it's like being sequestered, much like Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Pennsylvania's weird. You get in the middle of the state for hours, and there's not a whole lot. Yeah.
No, but, I wasn't there to do a whole lot to begin with.
Yeah. This record, I guess, has been in construction, incubation, whatever you want to call it, for quite a long time. What took so long to get this one out?
Well, we were writing songs, started writing songs after Numinosum was released. And, like I said, Storm Crow was the first one that came out. And, over time, I just started writing music. And by the time I had like four or five tracks going, I started searching for an outlet. Meaning I was like, I wanted to find a label that would be interested in helping me fund the recording of the rest of the album and distribute it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, with the way it turned out, no one was really interested. I don't know why, but there wasn't really any interest in the music I was sharing with people at labels.
Huh.
So I just kept recording, kept demoing, working on the demos, remixing the demos, just making them, building upon them better, making them better over time. And there was a lot of ideas I wanted to do for this record and make it move forward. I had a vision in my mind the entire time of what I wanted to achieve with this record. So, that's what kept me going. Just my vision and the need to finish it. And, we've, over time, the record evolved. One of the things I wanted from this record after Numinosum was released was that we were playing live shows after the release. And we did we did some shows with Killing Joke,
yeah.
Which was their reunion, so to speak, after Paul Raven's death. And so watchers were able to play three of the four shows they did. And it was during those shows is when I realized, damn, the live version of these songs was what I wanted this record to sound like. So this is what I wanted. I wanted the fullness I wanted the intensity of live. I wanted the sonic experience that the live versions brought onto this album. So that was one of the other things that kept me going. It's like, I got to make this happen. So finding a studio that could accommodate that as well was also not holding me back. It was also, I was kind of like searching for that as well. And that didn't really come into play until Jason and I really started communicating on a full level of friendship. It was amazing.
And was that, were you able to get that sound live because of other players, or what did you do?
The live, obviously it's live drums, and yeah. It was the live drums, I think, really enhanced a big part of the sound, the organic sound of it, the organic flow of it. And when we played live, we didn't follow a click track. We were all playing following the drummer, and to me that was the most exciting part about it. So it was the live aspect, was just full, not necessarily the players, but it was just everyone playing at the same time in rhythm. Was just, that's what I wanted to capture, which is like everyone together.
Yeah, and I assume you feel like you were able to manage that with Apocrypha.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For the most part, it was easier. We obviously recorded to a click track because, that's what people do,
right,
when they record. But we kept it a little bit as loose as we could. But that's what we did achieve. That the live drum, Chase captured the live drums, and he captured the guitar sound. It's all because Jace's studio is a modern analog studio, which is a rarity, but it's starting to become in popularity again. People are realizing that analog components and outboard gear make the sound, just enhances the sound, because digital and everything digital, if it's all in the box, is very thin sounding. In digital, you lose like 7 frequencies above and 8 frequencies below the sound that analog does capture. So you're missing so much depth that digital misses. So
yeah,
that was definitely an important key in recording in Northstone Studios with Jace.
That's interesting. I didn't know I didn't know the term modern analog, which of course sounds like an oxymoron, but it makes sense. So
it is. It's like Civil War, modern analog.
Yeah.
It should make sense, but it does. You're still using Pro Tools. You're still using that recording capability, but everything going into it has more depth instead of, going directly in. The Neves, the Rossers, this type of compressor, I can't remember, that are based in analog technology, provide digital makes a huge difference.
Yeah, that's, I don't know much about it, but I will take your word for it, because what I hear on, like I said, from the earlier records to this record is a huge jump. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in the recording though, also in the songwriting. It seems like you guys went a little bit different direction. I don't even know which way it went, but I don't know. There's a calmness to it that
it's a certainty.
Yeah, like, maybe more
it's
confidence too. Yeah, more confidence. Yeah. It sounds intentional, and
exactly.
And
we knew we had good songs. It just needed the right performance and the right recording to really capture it all. As time goes by, different experiences make me create different songs, different arrangements. But it's all still the one thing that all the songs have in common is that I'm the primary songwriter. They all came from my soul, and that's what I really believe that Jace captured on this record.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for a guy like you who has put so many songs out into the world over the years, with whatever projects, is there does Does Watchers do something different for you? Does it fill a different void than maybe artistically or, you know, I don't know, cathartically?
Well, absolutely.
Than your other
absolutely.
Stuff?
Absolutely. It does. It's truly cathartic for me. It's a very, you know, like I said, it's a very personal band. The songs are very personal to me. They're very personal experiences or events that have affected my life, you know, immediately. So for me, it is the most, it is the best example of my music that has ever been recorded.
Oh, wow. That's quite a bold statement, and I like it. I like it. There's more of that confidence, right?
Yeah, it's all that confidence. It's because it's all coming from me.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the sound, the emotion, the lyrics, it all came from me. I'm not trying to be egotistical. I'm not trying to, you know, sound like a control freak, but this is how this band started.
Yeah.
With the music that I was writing. And that continued through the writing all through the past 10 years or 12 years of Apocrypha, or what would eventually become Apocrypha.
Right, right. Do you feel like this is the Watchers and Apocrypha, like, I don't know, it might be an unfair thing, but do you feel like you had to make this record now? Like, do you think you would have been capable of making a record like this when you were younger? Or is this something that needed to age with you and then come out?
That's a really good question. This record came out when it was supposed to. I would have never done this record 20 years ago. I would have never done this record 10 years ago. I am now 51 years old. And to me, the sound and the concepts and the narrative that's going on in this record is that of a person who is not only matured through the years, but has experienced so much through the years that only someone of experience can create an album like this.
Yeah, I like that. That's a great answer. You've had one song, at least as far as I know, just one song out from this to the public, Old Ghosts. Is there any other that are out there?
Not right now, but we're getting ready to release our second single from the album in a week and a half.
Okay, maybe, so, you know. So you've had Old Ghosts out there for like 2 weeks or something. How's the feedback been so far with just that one?
Very positive. Seems like a lot of people underestimated me, and it's blowing them. A lot of people are blown away. A lot of people are really into it. You know, I get reports that people are listening to it nonstop. YouTube is over 22,000 views after 2 weeks. Spotify is over 22,000 listens over 2 weeks, and for a sense of the Watchers, that's great. Especially since, you know, we really have no social media presence. That this song, Ghost Heart, and the coming album is really changing all that.
Yeah, and you know, I sent it to, or I was talking to a friend of mine today who's very familiar with you, but didn't know about this either. And he checked it out today, and he as well was into it, and particularly he was talking about how good you sound on there. And I thought the same thing.
That's awesome.
I thought the same thing when I've been listening to this record, is that you haven't sounded this good in a long time, and I don't mean that as an insult in any way at all. I mean that in such a good thing. Is that like
no
you said,
insult taken.
51 years old, and you sound to me at your best.
Well, thank you. And you know, just for me, this is the music of my soul. So being able to sing my lyrics to the songs that came from my person, from my heart, meant so much for me that I, you know, singing this was no issue.
Yeah.
And being able to sing it in the range that I would prefer singing in, it just made me so happy.
that's a reason to do it well. And I know the unfair question again, but do you have a favorite track on this record?
God, they're all, you know, they're all like children.
Right.
You know, it's hard to choose. But, yeah, it changes day to day. But, past couple of days, I found myself singing the song A Wolf Interlude to myself a lot. And, you know, like I said, all these songs are personal. And A Wolf Interlude is a song I wrote for my son.
That is
and his middle name.
Sorry.
And his middle name is Wolf. And his middle name is Wolf.
Okay. So, all right. That is exactly the song I was going to ask you about, because that is exactly the song that I like the best. And so, wow. I'm glad you said that. And my question, which is a really, really surface question, is it really an interlude? It's a pretty long song.
Yeah. But an interlude is it's a break between ideas.
Okay.
Well,
all right.
Or a break between a movement of sorts, as you might call it. No, it's not really short, but it changes up. And so, A is actually a play on words, because my son's first name starts with A, so it's A Wolf, and then it's the interlude after that. And then the whole song actually started off like an interlude, because it started off as a piano part. So the middle piano part and the break is the original part. It's the original arrangement that I wrote. And I played it so much on the piano that my son started playing it.
Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool. Well, yeah, that's awesome. And there's other songs on here that I've latched onto. Does the title track come after that, or is that no? Honoree comes after.
No, so it goes Ghost Heart, The End Is Always Beginning, Apocrypha, A Wolf Interlude, Honoree. Honoree is a song for my youngest daughter.
Well,
that's her middle name.
That's one I love as well. It's like those three in a row. The title track, A Wolf Interlude, and Apocrypha, or I'm sorry, an Honoree. Those are the three. Like that, to me, that's the part of the album that I'm really sticking to and enjoying. And
well, thank you. That makes me happy that you say that. Everybody has their, everyone's different. Everyone has their favorite song, and it's just all over the board.
I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I did want to ask you real quick about the thing that I've read about the sounds at the beginning of the title track. What's happening there? Can you explain that situation a little bit?
You got time?
I got time. Yeah. Do you have time?
So I do have time. This is actually the last interview for the day.
Good.
So, like I said, like I told you before, Chase's studio is built next to a 250-year-old manor.
Uh-huh.
Now, the manor was built on top of the ruins of an ancient monastery. And a lot of the rocks from that monastery kind of litter the area around the manor. And some of the bricks, or some of the stones from that monastery, were actually still part of a shed. It was like, that's where they put the carts in and the hay. So that area that he built the studio in was like an old shed where the tools and stuff were. So he kept the walls of that up, and he found a lot of the other stones that were littering the area. And Jace built his studio with those stones. By hand, and built Northstone Studios. So, for me, I believe in science, and I believe in physical science. And one fact of science that cannot be refuted is that energy is a constant.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that not just physically but metaphysically. Energy continues, and whatever energy is running our bodies continues after there is no, it can no longer power the decrepit body as it grows old. So with that in mind, I've had experiences through my life that I cannot explain, when it comes to like paranormal activity.
Sure.
So that was a foundation. So, as we're recording the album, everything was rather quiet, and nothing was really, not much was going on. It was just, it's just Jace and I in the studio. Jace has the only key to the studio. When we would leave the studio, in the drum room, there is a coffee station with a shelf with the teas and coffees and a kettle and a small dorm fridge And so all that was together. And as the recording progressed, and as the recording progressed, things started happening. For instance, you know, after we closed up, cleaning up and closing up, the next day we would come back, open the doors, and go to make our tea and coffee. And a lot of the things from the shelf would be strewn on the floor.
Oh, wow.
And we're like, okay, you know, yeah, wow, but you know, we're logical people.
Right.
We were able to explain it away. It's like, oh, maybe the dorm fridge just, you know, rattled a little bit too much and shook everything off. You know, and we would hear the thing rattle off sometimes. Like, okay, we explain that. But it wasn't until I started seeing the actual lyrics to Apocrypha, singing the words, recording that song vocally, that activity really started to amp up even more. So there's three rooms that are in this studio, in North Sound Studios. The middle room where you walk into is the entrance. The middle live room is where we built the vocal booth. And the vocal booth we set that up in front of the control room window, which is to the right, so I could see Jason in the control room, which is a separate room. And behind me would be the live drum room, which is separated by glass doors. So I'm looking at, you know, in my small booth that we built, I'm looking at Jace through the window, and he can't hear me. And I can hear him. He's like, I can't hear you. You know, can you check your mic? And so I'm, you know, doing vocal warm-ups or whatever so he can hear me. And after a few minutes of trying to mess with it on the control room side, he walks in. Goes, okay, I got to check the cable connections. I got to figure out what's going on here. So we followed the cable connection from the microphone to the drum room. And he followed it to the multi input box where, you know, a lot of the microphones were input into. Mm-hmm. And the microphone cable was pulled out. And I was like, well, what'd you do that for? He goes, I didn't do that. I'm like, well, don't look at me. And if you're familiar with XLR cables, when they're patched into an input, you have to literally press clamps up down to release it.
Okay.
And so it couldn't have been tripped on, and it couldn't have been, you know, I didn't do it, he didn't do it. So we're like, okay, that's strange. We couldn't explain that. But either way, we're like, okay, we're going to just continue doing the vocals, continue with our vocals. So we started, you know, doing vocal tracks, a few takes here and there, just a few takes over and over again. And after a couple hours, you're like, okay, let me clean this up. You know, all the files on the Pro Tools, and we clean this up, arrange some things, and we can continue. It's like, okay, fine, well, you know, just relax. And so I probably just stayed in the booth, just relaxing while he was doing his thing, because it's only going to take a few minutes. So he goes, Bert, come in here a second. Can you explain why were you singing at this part? I'm like, I don't know. So I guess I left the booth. I don't know. I don't remember leaving the booth. But I went to go check. Well, I left the booth to go check out the waveform. And the waveform was after the song was completely over. So there was no need for me to sing.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, that's weird. I don't know. Why would I sing if there's no music? Why would I say anything? So I said, I don't know. So he clicked on it to play it. And we just hear this like weird sound, and then this. I'm like, you know, I can't really hear it. So you have to like not clean it up, but turn
amplify
it up so you can hear what's going on. Amplify it. So as we turned it up, it was the sound of the old wooden door opening between the live room and the control room, and then all of a sudden, like you know, some electrical. Like some kind of electrical interference, the amp just goes like the gain was turned all the way up on the microphone, and all of a sudden in this, you know, electrical stat, you know, that static of like high gain, you hear this fucking eerie whisper. I'm like, what? And we both first time, God, I'm thinking about it right now, the first time we heard that, I got the hair on my back of my neck and arms just like stood up, and I had this chill down my spine of like, what the fuck was that? And then after that whisper, the fucking door closes again. I'm like, what the fuck happened there? I don't know. I don't fucking know. It's like, and we listened to it over again. I was like, that's not English. Goes, no. I go, is that Latin? He goes, I have no idea. He's like, is it ancient Gaelic? He goes, I have no idea. But it is definitely, it has syllables, and it is a voice. I have no idea what it says. But, you know, that was recorded at the very end. You know, if that was, for instance, if that was me whispering into it with that high gain, I would have blown out the microphone with the amount of gain that was on that microphone at that point. Whatever whispered into it was very, very ethereal or very soft, just like almost not even there.
Yeah.
And if I had opened the door and walked in, left the door open, you would hear me talking or Jace talking in the other room. You don't hear anything else. It's like something walked in, spoke on the microphone, and walked out.
Well, it is a super creepy thing.
So I go, that's got to be the intro to the song. That's what that just, you know, that is the event of the album. The next event that happened that we could not record, but I was still, you know, still doing vocals. Funny thing is that all this activity started when I was doing vocals, which is very odd to me. Like, whatever was there wanted me to know that it was there. He wanted us to know that it was present. So another day, day two later, you know, I was part of the Pledge campaign. I was, drawing the drum skins. And I was doing one drum skin, drawing something. I can't remember what I was doing, but I was doing it in the control room. And so in the control room, there's Chase's control board in front of the studio window. And then behind him to the left is, you know, a couch with a coffee table that we had our, you know, drinks, whatever on it. But that's where I left the markers and the drum skin that I was drawing on. And, you know, while I was left on the table, I was doing vocals. And while I was doing vocals, this one day, Chase and I are talking back and forth together on TalkBack between the live room and the studio, the control room. As we were talking and his TalkBack mic's on, I hear this like loud, like, you know, it was like a clang, like something fell over. I said, what the fuck was that? He goes, I don't know. And he goes, got silent. He goes, you got to come in here. So I left the vocal booth, opened the door, and on the floor in front of the door was the drum skin. And he goes, man, I saw something move in my, you know, my left periphery, and then that noise. Something flew that drum skin across the table, across the floor, which is about 6 to 8 feet, and hit that door.
Damn, that's nice.
That drum skin was on the floor.
Wow.
There was a couple other things, but it was just like, you know, after I left, like the day after I left, Chase went into the studio, and in a lot of studios, they have the guitar amps, like, you know, a Marshall amp or a Laney or whatever you have. They have them like stacked on a shelf in a corner or against the wall, so you can just input and use different ones. So he walked in, and like the third amp up, about 4, maybe 5 feet up off the floor, there was a Laney amp on the shelf, but something pushed that amp off the shelf, and it was dangling by its power cord.
Wow. That's going to get expensive staying in that studio.
It could be. And, you know, Jace has seen shadows he cannot explain.
Wow, that's nuts. Well, I read that there was something about that, you know, about that noise at the beginning of the track, and I listened to it myself, and it does sound super, super creepy, and I was wondering about why you hear, like, the movements at the beginning and at the end, but as you explained, that's the door, and that's cool. That's awesome that you guys caught that, and it is a great little thing to have on the record.
Yeah, I had to. It's like, this is the best intro ever recorded. We got to use it.
Well, I'm glad you got it on your favorite record you've recorded so far too. Then that's awesome.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm very proud of this record. It's a lot of heart and soul went into it, not just for me, but from John and Jace as well.
Yeah.
You know, we're all very proud of this record. And we definitely want to do the best that we can to push it.
Awesome. Well, it comes out, October 9th on Dissonance Productions?
October 9th, and we do have a new single coming out October 2nd.
Awesome. Well, hey, Burton, like I said before, I've been a fan of you, Fear Factory, this stuff for my whole life. I remember when I would just get excited about the local band covering Scum Grief, you know? So like, you know, I've been loving Fear Factory for most of my life, and this new band, well, I guess it's not new, you've been around for a long time, but this new record is great, and I'm really excited about it.
Thanks, Dan. So you're in Lancaster. There's new venues in Harrisburg yet?
There's one called HMAC that is the only one I know that's really happening at this point. The one, our long running one here, the Chameleon Club, just closed like 2 weeks ago. So,
So have you lived in Lancaster a long time?
I lived in York and then Lancaster and then Baltimore and then back to Lancaster and then York. So yeah, I've always been in this area. Yeah.
Yeah. The last time I remember playing Harrisburg, the only time we played Harrisburg was 1995, opening up for Iron Maiden.
Oh wow, where was that?
It was some shitty club in downtown Harrisburg. It was the tour that Iron Maiden did with Blaze Bailey.
I was gonna say it had to be. If you're playing a shitty club in Harrisburg, it had to be.
Yeah. that wasn't the shittiest club we played on that tour. That tour gave Iron Maiden's tour manager a heart attack.
I bet.
I'm not trying to laugh, but he survived, but it definitely took a toll on his health.
Well, I think that'll do it for you, or that'll do it for many people. But, hey, man.
Awesome, Dan. Is there anything else out there you want to get out?
Shit, I don't think so. But hey, I really do appreciate this, and thanks for doing it.
My pleasure, Dan. I really appreciate your time, and thank you for covering us.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. All right, Burton, take care.
All right. You too, brother. All right, bye. Later.
So there you have it. That's my conversation with Burton C. Bell. And the song there at the end was The End Is Always the Beginning, also off of Apocrypha, as we've talked about many times, and we will continue to. One last time, Apocrypha, October 9th on, what was the record label called? I don't remember. But it's a great record. Be sure to check it out when you can next week or earlier. If somehow you found a way to do it, just do it. Just enjoy it. How about that? Just make sure you enjoy it. Again, I'm grateful for the opportunity to have that conversation, and I feel like that's been happening a lot lately with the podcast. A lot of cool conversations with people that I never thought I'd talk to. So yeah, that's something to be excited about. Another thing to be excited about is gettingitout.net is coming eventually. Yeah, 10 months of me telling you it's coming eventually. Well, it looks like it actually might get started today. The wheels are in motion, and they might be coming to your computer screen in the very near future. And don't worry, I will blast all that everywhere I can the moment it is available. You can be ready for that by going to you can go to gettingitout.net and bookmark that website right now. It's going to be one of your favorites. And then you can go over to the Instagram page at @getting_it_out_podcast and go to the Facebook page, www.facebook.com/gettingitoutpodcast. And there's a Twitter at gettingitoutpod. If you got any interest in writing about music, being involved, doing record reviews, talking to bands, doing interviews yourself, reach out to me, dan@gettingitout.net. That's my email address. We can work something out. We can make it happen. We can get some projects for you, get something under your belt, have a little fun, get to have these conversations with people that you never thought you'd talk to. I can hook you up. Maybe there's a bit of a vetting process. The way it works is you got to respond to the second email, because everybody emails me first. So they reach out first and they're like, yeah, I want to do this. And I'm like, all right, cool. Here's the deal. Here's all the information. Here's all the access. And then you don't hear squat. It's really weird. It's a very strange thing. But it's an epidemic. I've heard it's from many websites have this problem too. So if you yourself are interested in being involved, please reach out to me, dan@gettingitout.net. That's my email. All right. So last thing, we got to play one more song to end this thing on a high note, right? So let's go. Let's change directions. Let's play a track from an Australian progressive death metal band. that doesn't really fit in with this episode, but that's all right, because we started with hardcore. We did some I don't know what we call Burton's band. I don't know what we call Ascension of the Watchers, electronic music. I don't know. And now we're ending it with progressive death metal, and I think that's okay. This is Growth out of Australia, and the song is called Something Follows. Enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe, like, rate, review, all those things that do me good. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.